Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast wind, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
And that's a wrap for Mr. Nelson today. Happy Wednesday. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. This is the medium we have chosen. As I said, it's Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. A lot going on. Sue on Twitter, who's in the, by the way, Sue's in the phone, listening on phone. She says, I can't wait to hear Hank talk about the G7. I'm not going to say much about it, Sue, because frankly, it's disheartening. So much of what we've seen out of it, you would think the media would be painting our president in his best light, or our alleged president in his best light. Not so. Actually, what's really sad, though, and I'll talk about it a little bit, but is who is covering it and how they're covering it. As I said, I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Every Monday, Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Every Tuesday, Eric from Kafiristan with Radio Free Kafiristan. Wednesdays, it's me. And then Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, Andrew Herod, Conservative Casual Friday, a.k.a. Islam in Focus. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. Sundays, Eric's back. Eric does double duty during the week. He's back with the real interfaith dialogue. There's other shows on Blog Talk Radio we should talk about. Tim Tapp with Tap Into Truth. Dave and G-Ski with Airwaves America, the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. Joseph Gibson, he's on at night, usually later at night. And then Annie with Southern Sense, Fridays. Check them all out, folks. When you come into Blog Talk Radio, look for the live. Look for something good. And then if you don't see anything there, look in politics or sports or wherever, because sometimes they're there, but they don't chat. They don't open their chat. There's reasons for it, but sometimes people don't. They just don't. So if you want to interact with the show, you can listen online, of course. blogtalkradio.com/global-patriot-radio. I also put out the actual link to the show in my Twitter feed every Wednesday. Those of you that get my text message, I put it in there as well. You can call in, as several people have done, 319-527-6706. You call in, you can listen, but you can also hit 1 and harass me. I may hang up, but you can at least try. I'm also on Twitter, as I said, at HPolySports. I got a Facebook page. You can email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. But, of course, like I said, the best way, 319-527-6706, especially if I touch on something that you really want to talk about. Call in, hit that 1. Okay, this week's obituaries. In what is being called and investigated as a suicide, former Alabama football player and TV news anchor Christopher Sine was found dead at his home this past Saturday at the age of 45. The fact he was working the night before and his coworkers were messaging about that, the fact that he had received constant death threats since breaking the 2016 story of the tarmac meeting between Clinton crime family boss Bill Clinton and Capo then Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And then he was also noted as a devoted husband and father. I can only say the Clintons and Big Left got to another one. The fact it's being investigated as a suicide is amazing. It's also an insult to both his family and friends. He had moved several times and finally moved back to be with his wife and kids, but they'd moved him around and they'd moved the family around. It's an insult to the public at large, who are aware of the fact that he broke the story of Bill Clinton's fake coincidental meeting with then Capo Loretta Lynch back in 2016, you know, where they discussed grandkids and not the status of the investigation of Hillary Rodham Clinton and her sending and receiving classified info on a personal email server. Yeah, I'll talk about it a little later. Actress Lisa Baines passed away, I think yesterday, maybe it was Monday, roughly 10 days after a hit-and-run accident in New York City. She was hit by a motor scooter, and then the driver took off, has yet to be identified, has yet to be found, at least publicly. Lisa Baines was 65. She was the lady in the Tom Cruise movie Cocktail. I remember he's taken up with Elizabeth Shue's character, and for some reason he takes up with Lisa Baines' character to prove to his former bartender buddy that he could score a rich chick. And frankly, blowing off that character the way he did pretty much always confirmed in my mind the rumors we hear about Tom Cruise anyway, but that's a me thing. Also last week, we lost actor Ned Beatty to natural causes at the age of 83. He appeared in numerous movies, Network, Superman, remember Otis Berg, The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean, Nashville. Yeah, that Nashville, the movie, not that stupid TV series. All the President's Men, The Toy, Back to School, and one of my favorite movies, Sweetland, among others. But let's be blunt, Ned Beatty's big screen debut in Deliverance pretty much left as big an impression as any of his other roles. His role as Bobby, a.k.a. Chubby, was a role that could only be described as a haunting. I say that for one of our listeners. Haunting. And an incident almost as puzzling as that of Christopher Sine, former Mississippi State Representative Ashley Henley, was killed last week near where her sister-in-law had been found dead back in 2019. Henley and her husband had insisted that her sister-in-law was murdered and that Yallabusha County law enforcement refused to look into it at all. Ashley Henley was 40. She was a victim of a gunshot. And then this, just a month and a half after his father's passing, former car racer Bobby Unser Jr. passed away last week. He was 65. He died after complications from hip surgery. Sad. And then finally last week, we lost retired Major League Baseball pitcher Mudcat Grant at the age of 85. Grant was the first black pitcher to win 20 games in a season in the American League. He was a two-time All-Star. He led the AL in wins in 1965, played for eight different MLB teams from 1958 to 1971. No cause given there. Okay, politics news. The Christopher Sein story. Let's just get right to it. Christopher Sein was 45 years old. Now, by all accounts, he was a devoted family man and father. He had everything to live for. He was quite engaging with his coworkers. Still at work the night before, working on stories with his coworkers. 911 call Saturday morning, reporting, quote, a person down. So at least whoever did it wanted him to be found. Not sure that's a good thing, but yeah, he was the one who broke the news back in 2016. Hey, welcome to the chat room, Vito. Back in 2016, Christopher Sein broke the story of a meeting on a tarmac in Arizona. That's two planes that happened to get together and stop so that a former president could go speak to the attorney general in the administration that his former wife worked. And his former wife has been a president or a candidate for president of the United States. But they talked about grandkids. You ever catch yourself doing that? You're flying somewhere. Maybe you're flying an F-16 or you're flying backseat. And you just say, hey, wait, let's pull over. There's my buddy Vito flying. We want to talk about grandkids. Are you kidding me? So he was found dead by police at his home in Scout Trace, Alabama. He did play football at Alabama. Like I said, being investigated as a suicide. Now, a Saturday tribute on the website of his local station said he was a tremendous leader in the newsroom. He worked with the staff, reporting staff, on a daily basis. Also worked behind the scenes and with news managers on coverage of major events. Often sent stories, ideas in the middle of the night via email. Passionate about journalism, showed it each and every day. So he had three sons, his wife Laura, whom he met at Alabama in the 1990s. He played on the offensive line. So if you play offensive line at Alabama, you're a good football player. His wife was an all-SEC volleyball player. Now, I haven't heard anything publicly from her about this. I imagine we will not. I imagine she's devastated. I also imagine she's being told to lay low because whoever did this to her husband is going to want to know what she might know. The network sports anchor Jamie Hale said, I can't believe we have an article with this title. It doesn't feel real. We were in the office together last night, cutting up like we always do. I don't understand why. I can't talk about you in the past tense. The grief today is unbearable. The station manager, Eric Land, said, our deepest sympathy is shared with his loving family and close friends. We have lost a revered colleague whose indelible imprint will serve forever as a hallmark of decency, honesty, and journalistic integrity. You know, I mean, how are we supposed to sit there and take this with a straight face? He'd worked for a TV station in Phoenix. That's where he broke the story in 2016. Clinton met with Lynch on the tarmac of the Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. While she was investigating the use of a private email server by Hillary Clinton, the former president's wife, and they talked about grandkids. He went on to write a book about it called Secret on the Tarmac. He told Fox and Friends in February of 2020, we knew something had occurred that was a bit unusual. It was a planned meeting. It was not a coincidence. He went on to tell Fox and Friends that the investigation made his life a living hell. He and his family received death threats. Credit cards were hacked. He and his kids and his wife had to have code words, secret code words, so that they would know what to do in given situations. Christopher Sine dead at 45 of suicide. Exactly. Like I said, the insult, I mean, it's insulting to the wife and the kids, obviously, but it's an insult to the American public. I mean, how many more people that have some connection to the Clintons have to get killed before somebody says something? Before somebody just sits right down and says, all right, enough is enough. Anybody that crosses these people gets killed or kills themselves. And we talk about Jeffrey Epstein, but Epstein was a scumbag. Here we're talking about a guy, a noble guy, a former college football player, loving husband and father, three kids. And you're going to ask, and he was in the office the night before, cutting up like always, said his coworker. And now you're asking, well, let's just say me. Let's say it's only about me. You're asking me to believe that this guy committed suicide. Unreal. And again, when is somebody going to step up? I mean, I can say it. People on our network can say it. I mean, the American, you know, this has to get, I haven't seen much on it on Twitter, really. A little bit, but not much. When are people going to hold the media to account? When are people going to hold the Clintons to account? When are people just going to stand up and say, like that little soundbite I play, bullshit. This is not a suicide. We don't believe it. There's no explanation for it. No. Here's some slightly good news, courtesy of the Epic Times. It seems a federal judge has blocked La Dopi Nostra and their ban on oil and gas leases on federal land and water. This is a ruling in a case brought by Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry. It's part of a 13-state lawsuit. Look, while this is good, as it stops the current suspension of oil and gas lease permits, who knows how long it'll last? But anyway, the order from U.S. District Judge Terry Dowdy in Louisiana notes that, quote, the plaintiff state's claims are substantial. Millions and possibly billions of dollars are at stake. Local government, jobs for plaintiff state workers, and funds for the restoration of Louisiana's coastline are at stake. Plaintiff states have a reliance interest in the proceeds derived from offshore and on-land oil and gas leases. Now, the plaintiff states also argued that La Dopi Nostra imposed the moratorium with no public comment time, no other administrative steps that are required that are normally taken. The day, Judge Dowdy's order also noted that La Dopi Nostra failed to provide sufficient rationale for the order beyond saying the U.S. must advance environmental justice and reduce the impact of climate change. Believe me when I say, in spite of an Interior Department spokesperson saying they will abide by the ruling, this will either be appealed or reimposed in some other fashion, probably just as sweeping as the original order, which, by the way, came on the first day of La Dopi Nostra. Yeah, and as pointed out, there are steps that have to be taken. Public comment, other administrators, you don't just, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, to my other point about this, you know, somebody in the administration, in the Department of Energy or Department of the Interior or whatever, has to sign off on these leases. So it's real easy to just shuffle paperwork and set it aside and say, oh, yeah, that, oh, yeah, uh-huh. But at least it's a good start in that a judge is saying no. Here's another one from the Epic Times. This is an excellent op-ed piece from former Trump advisor and New York Lieutenant Governor Betsy McCoy regarding education in our public schools. Again, this is one of those items that only gets its just due from me reading it. Having me just tell you about it isn't going to cut it. So I read it for you here, if I could get it to open, of course. That's always a good challenge. So let me get it. Betsy McCoy. And it's titled Opinion, The Leftists Writing Your Child's Social Studies Lessons. It's hard to know what's worse, brainwashing kids or lying about it. Parents worried their kids are being indoctrinated with critical race theory can't get straight answers. Local school boards and principals lie to them, claiming children are merely being taught to be, quote, critical thinkers, unquote. On Saturday, the truth came out. Teachers' unions and activists held rallies in 22 cities to support critical race theory. What they said was eye-popping. They unabashedly declared that their goal is indoctrinating students in far-left causes. The Zinn Education Project, which organized Saturday's events, produces race-centric material for junior high and high schools across the country. Lesson plans are offered free for teachers to download. Parents wondering where the critical race theory that their children are getting comes from can go on the website. They will be shocked. Zinn was founded by the late Howard Zinn, a Marxist historian who said that teaching social studies wasn't about dates and events. It was to make students want to change the world and overthrow the status quo. A Zinn lesson titled Students Design a Reparations Bill explains that students will be asked to improve on the, quote, flimsy, unquote, reparations bills currently in Congress. Critical thinking is not encouraged. This isn't a debate about whether there should be reparations. This is one-sided indoctrination. As racial justice activists, students are all on the same side in this role play, says the Zinn website. Other extreme left groups supplying social studies materials for schools include the Southern Poverty Law Center, who, by the way, has named Global Patriot Radio as a hate group, and the group Black Lives Matter at School. Now, Southern Poverty Law Center tells educators to stand their ground against parents, quote, and vigorously resist efforts to maintain the status quo, unquote. No wonder parents are getting the runaround. It's not just white families protesting. Keisha King, a black mother from Duval County, Florida, warned the Florida Board of Education that telling a child he or she is the victim of oppression is the essence of holding a child back. Michael Rivera, a Virginian, explains that he married a wonderful woman who happens to be white. My son is white. He objects that, according to critical race theory, my son should have white guilt and white privilege. More than 500 people have signed a petition demanding a curriculum that allows students to learn without the titles of racist and victim in Guilford, Connecticut, a small town outside New Haven. Yet the Guilford school superintendent insists schools aren't teaching critical race theory. Does he think parents are lying about the homework in their kids' backpacks? In Greenwich, Connecticut, parents went to the microphone at a May 20th school board meeting. Parents took, quote, materials that their children had brought home, including a white bias survey for seventh graders. School board members and school superintendents sat silently. Last week, the superintendent sent out an email to parents explaining that Greenwich wants students to, quote, be critical thinkers, unquote, but deftly denying that critical race theory is part of the curriculum. That may be technically true. Critical race theory originated in law schools. But what's being taught in elementary and secondary schools across the country is a simplified version. School administrators will lie and obfuscate to push ahead with critical race theory. Parents have only one choice. They have to organize and run candidates to replace the local school boards. School board elections are usually quiet. Quiet because unions and other insiders like it that way. Now is the time for parents to grab control. 20 states with Republican legislative majorities are trying to ban critical race theory. They're not calling for whitewashing American history, as some activists claim, but they require diversity of viewpoints and prohibit lessons that would shame students for their quote-unquote privilege. Even so, state bans are not ideal. They may run afoul of the First Amendment, and it's hard to know what's going on in each school. That's what local school boards are for. Even in blue states, Republican candidates who challenge local school boards will make inroads and gain converts to the GOP. This is a winning issue. Parents, whether Democrat or Republican, black or white, want their children to be educated, not indoctrinated. And that from the brilliant Betsy McQuay. You know, I don't have kids school-aged. My daughter's getting married in a couple months. She wants to have kids. And my daughter's a Republican. She's marrying a guy who's not. He's pretty liberal. I don't care. He's a great guy, but that's not my point. My point is that, you know, there you could have a potential split anyway, but when she sends her kids to school, what are they going to learn? Are there any teachers out there left who have the guts to do what's right, to teach actual history, to teach regular math, not new math? And frankly, to teach the classics. You know, there are people, I was an English major in college, there are people that said, oh, Huck Finn, it was racist. I didn't like the way they treated Jim. And the only answer to that is, did you do a close reading of the book? The whole point of that book is that Huck Finn is absolutely repulsed by how Jim is treated. That was the whole point of the book. You know, nowadays, I imagine, well, they did a remake of Roots a few years ago, but the original Roots would probably not fly these days. I mean, I think it does because it was such a landmark series. But the whole point wasn't to glorify slavery. Of course not. The point was to point out, one, this was just a family history, but it was to point out what had happened back then. But it's also to point out how far we've come. I mean, you realize, people, in a little over 200 years, 228 years, actually, in 228 years, or was that it? 232 years. In 232 years, the United States not only had gotten rid of slavery, they had a black president. How many black prime ministers have you seen in England, France? How many black chancellors in Germany? How many black leaders in Eastern Europe? See my point? The United States has done a far better job in making this a melting pot. And the problem with calling it a melting pot isn't necessarily the best thing either. We don't want people to forget their culture, where they came from, especially people that came here in first generation. If you have friends who are from Africa, don't tell them that you should blow off everything that you came from. Embrace American culture, but teach us about your culture. It's important to know where our newer immigrants, legal immigrants, came from. It's important to know why they came here. It's not enough to say, oh, oppression or opportunity. Sometimes it's simply they just didn't, you know, they didn't have a choice. They didn't see much hope. Other times it's because they know somebody here. Other times, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons for legal immigrants to come here. It's not, they don't come here to get free health care and that kind of stuff. They come here to do it right. They're grateful for the opportunity. People said it wasn't fair that Americans were succeeding so much versus others. You know why? Because they didn't know they were supposed to fail when they came here. Okay. Dopey Joe was supposed to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin today, post G7 meetings in England. Here's one thing I'll bet Jopy Doe won't mention, given that he's so worried about white supremacy and climate change. Apparently over the weekend, the FAA requested Hawaii National Guard to scramble out fighters in response to the Russian Navy conducting what Moscow calls its largest exercise in the Pacific Ocean since the Cold War, 300 to 500 miles west of Hawaii. Now, this exercise involved surface ships, anti-submarine aircraft, and long-range bombers. U.S. defense officials said that the U.S. F-22s did not intercept any Russian aircraft as they had not entered the U.S. air defense identification zone, and they were probably too busy being inclusive anyway. A U.S. carrier strike group headed by the USS Vinson was conducting a pre-planned exercise 200 miles east of Hawaii. They moved that closer to Hawaii in response to the exercise. I got $20. It says Dopey Joe asked Putin if he wanted to watch Top Gun. Then he probably told him the Ballad of Corn Pop. We're in trouble, folks. We are in trouble. If you've seen the videos of AP Biden, Dopey Joe, trying to talk at the during interviews, pathetic. He keeps confusing Libya and Syria, and the Soviet Union needs to be rebuild Syria. I mean, Libya, I mean, whatever. That's not a misstep, folks. That's not just a follow-up. That's someone who's clearly not all there. And we can say it was funny. We did for a while. We said it with Bernie for a while. It's no longer funny when our president is going to a G7 summit and can't maintain conversation, can't maintain cogent press conference. I mean, really, you're not hearing about this from American media. I mean, the stuff that Sue has been posting on Twitter has been from Sky News, Sky News Australia, BBC. It hasn't been from ABC News or NBC News or Associated Press or even Fox News. It's been from foreign news sources that are saying Joe Biden, his mental equity, his, and they're not saying compromise, they're saying is faltering. So it's not funny. I mean, I'm not sure what the point was of him going to the G7 anyway. Probably just to give everything back that President Trump had made these people start paying on their own. He actually was asked about Ukraine joining NATO, and he said Ukraine had corruption issues to clean up. He tried to talk about Putin, why they weren't going to be doing a news conference, and totally blundered that and started stumbling everywhere. So, yeah, I didn't really want to talk about the G7 because it's depressing as hell. And we have a president who's being abused by his handlers, by his family. I'm not saying he needs to be in an assisted living facility yet, but he's damn close, and it's not funny. Joe Biden and the rest of his family, they're going to have to answer someday for this. They better have to answer someday for this. So, yeah, there's that. President Trump has received and accepted an invite from Texas Governor Greg Abbott to visit the border, a place where border czar and Dopey Joe La Nostra underboss Kamala Harris has yet to visit. Some of what President Trump had to say, he said, the Biden administration inherited from me the strongest, safest, and most secure border in U.S. history. And in mere weeks, they turned it into the single worst border crisis in U.S. history. It's an unmitigated disaster zone. I wish he'd said danger zone, because then I'd feel justified singing it. Because I, you know, talked about Tom Cruise earlier. I talked about Top Gun. Danger zone, fly into the... That's what you feel like singing. But again, not in a good way. So President Trump's going to go to the border. Here's something Brother Tommy mentioned in his call last week. And by golly, if Epic Times didn't cover it later. The story is about the movement of Californians to Texas and New Yorkers to Florida. Oddly, though, California, which also has folks moving to Idaho and to a lesser degree, as pointed out by one of our guests 2 weeks ago, Charlie Lachance, Montana, the greatest migration states in terms of outbound moves, not California, not New York. No, sir. The top five states for inbound, or the top three states for outbound are New Jersey, New York, and Illinois. Michigan and Pennsylvania are also hemorrhaging their citizenry. The top five states for inbound, according to North American Van Lines, Idaho, Arizona, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina. Now, there's no concrete numbers or specifics given. Taxes are probably a part of it. Weather is probably a part of it. Defund the police movements. All those are factors. Personally, I think seeing $4 plus gas in California can't be much of a reason for people to stay. And lockdowns, though they are abating or ending, they had to have been a factor, I would think. Anyway, just something to think about. Seriously, if you're in New York, stay the hell there. We don't want you or need you here in the South. Frankly, you folks in Illinois, you can stay the hell away too, especially you, Governor Pritzker and family. Family with a capital F, as in the Pritzker crime family. Man, you suck, dude. We don't want you, even as a visitor. Keep your fat ass in Illinois. Don't come here anymore. Don't send your family here anymore. Go hang out with Mayor Beetlejuice in Chicago, or better yet, stay in Springfield. Because you're really not worthy of any place better. Just stay there. Hey, a Florida appeals court has ruled that a local judge was too narrow in her review of an Alachua County mask mandate. While the appeals court did not summarily dismiss the ruling, it did send it back to be considered under broader privacy statutes. Kind of irrelevant at this point, given that Governor DeSantis has lifted all municipal mask mandates as of July 1st. Again, though, people remember, if a business wants to require masks, they can do so. You don't have to shop there. You don't have to eat there or whatever it is you would do there. You don't have to do that. But a business requiring masks is not violating your constitutional rights. So please, don't look stupid and start crying about a business that requires it. Just shut up. Stop shopping there. Stop eating there or whatever else you do. Just don't go there. But don't embarrass the rest of us with your utter ignorance of what falls under constitutional rights. Please don't. I don't want us. I mean, when this starts taking place, please let's not get on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and start talking about your constitutional rights because somebody, a store, requires a mask. It's their right. It's the same as the right of a baker not to bake a cake for a gay wedding. Please, I implore you, get the word out now. Hey, do you all see or hear about this Fox reporter in Houston? Started out her bit Monday by telling viewers, and they went to her for her live feed. She told viewers that Fox corporate was muzzling or controlling her content, and she's not alone, and that she has been recording them, and she's going to Project Veritas because she has been secretly recording the higher-ups. Oh, did I forget to say former Fox reporter? Because unless I am very wrong, Ivory Hecker ain't long for Fox after doing this. Still, I got to hand it to her. Ivory Hecker, her social media says that she's also a recording artist with several songs to her credit. She was listed on Fox 26 Houston's site as a general assignment reporter and fill-in anchor. By the way, now, if you go to fox26houston.com, you will find neither hide nor hair nor memory nor mention of Ivory Hecker on their personnel page. That sure did not take long, did it? No, it did not. Hey, here are some awesome fiscal news. U.S. Department of Education has discharged $500 million in student loan debt of 18,000 borrowers who it claims were defrauded by now-defunct ITT Tech, a for-profit chain that used to advertise all over TV. Remember those ads? Anyway, a quick visit to my phone's calculator says that's an average of almost $27,800 per borrower. Yeah, for ITT Tech? If you're taking out loans of $28,000 for ITT Tech, something's wrong, no doubt. Interesting side note, the DOE spokesperson, on condition of anonymity, of course, said that they're cracking down on the predatory lending practices of for-profit educational institutions. No mention of the free money they spew out for state institutions or the fact that every time they do that, commensurate increases in tuition and other costs occur. I mean, at this point, you really got to ask, why free college? They're just going to blow off the debt anyway. To some sports news. Hey, here's a shock. Horse trainer Bob Baffert is suing both Churchill Downs and New York State Racing for the two-year bans that each of them imposed on Bob Baffert. Baffert was suspended by each of them after two positive tests of his Kentucky Derby winner, Medina Spirit. In addition to that, an official preparing to head a horse racing review group at the federal level says the announcement of a positive test for Medina Spirit should not have come from Bob Baffert at a press conference. It should have come from Churchill Downs or Kentucky racing authorities, not from the mouth of Bob Baffert. Stay tuned, folks. Even though the Triple Crown is through, this horse racing season is far from over. A lot of seasons and meets are still forthcoming, and of course the Breeders' Cup takes place in November at Del Mar Racetrack, which, by the way, is in Maryland, where Baffert's horse did not win the Preakness, but did pass several pre-race drug tests, all before the second positive for Medina Spirit, of course. For this, I recommend Orville Redenbacher's as you sit by and watch this. You might, Jiffy Pop will do as well, especially if you don't want the hassle of having to get out oil or, you know, if you don't have a popcorn machine. Use Jiffy Pop, man. You can use it to play air banjo before you pop the stuff. I should know. I've done it numerous times. Speaking of moving on, former Nebraska quarterback Luke McCaffrey moved on from Nebraska to Louisville for about a week of practice. Now he's moving on to Rice because he wasn't guaranteed the starting job at Louisville. Two things on that. First of all, he couldn't win the starting job at Nebraska over Taylor Martinez. Secondly, you'd think with his dad, a former New York Giants star wide receiver Ed McCaffrey, being the head coach at Northern Colorado, he'd go there. Except younger brother Dylan McCaffrey already transferred there after not finishing out last season's preseason camp at Michigan, which, of course, occurred after not winning the starting quarterback job at Michigan. Hey, guys, look to your big brother Christian. He seems to be doing okay at running back. Maybe you guys just need a position switch, not a school switch. Just a thought. Just so you know, Iowa Hawkeye running back Tyler Goodson's YouTube series, Dream to Reality, debuts episode 4 today at 6 p.m. on YouTube, so 13 minutes ago. Basically, it's a series of videos showing the workouts he's doing and the work he's putting in this offseason, basically in his efforts to continually improve. He wants to become the Doak Walker Award winner, the best running back in college football. He's out of Sewanee, Georgia. He's the son of Maurice and Felicia Goodson. Listeners might remember I had Felicia on my show last summer. She talked about recruiting, what that was like with Tyler, football in general, cooking, the reason they were starting the Minority Athlete Coalition. Now, remember, when they heard about what was going on in Iowa at the time with the accusations about Chris Doyle, they were shocked. They had not heard anything about it. Tyler to say, what aren't you telling us? And it was news to him. He was absolutely shocked, said, Chris Doyle is my man. Not happening. Felicia herself said, Kirk Ferentz isn't a racist. I would know if he was a racist. He's not a racist. But part of the reason they started the Minority Athlete Coalition is because they understand that kids do go to schools where they may not feel they fit in at the culture, in that culture. Or the schools might not be as familiar with the culture that some of their players come from. It wasn't about shaking them down for this or, you know, dressing them down for that. It was about helping schools and the kids assimilate together. It wasn't about inclusivity or diversity or making sure everybody, you know, no, it wasn't that. It was to help them, to help schools and to help students. Actually, I'd love to have her back on and talk about it, see how they're doing. She shared something else pretty cool on Twitter today, by the way. On the Fox Sports app, the Iowa Hawkeyes are the fourth most followed team. They are ahead of Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Texas, Alabama, and Michigan State, and they are behind only Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio State. Pretty cool. College Football Playoff Committee and the NCAA are contemplating taking the College Football Playoff from 4 teams to 12. Basically, what it would do is guarantee spots for the 6 highest-ranked conference champions. See where that's going? And the 6 remaining highest-ranked teams as determined by the College Football Playoff Committee. Some of the questions that you're hearing out there right now include whether or not this is just a way to get more SEC or Big Ten teams in, or whether G5, Group of Five teams, will not be ranked as high. You know, will the committee start ranking? You know, last year, 12 teams last year would have included, I believe, Liberty and Coastal Carolina. Other years, it would have included UCF, Houston, Memphis, Boise State. So that's a question. So will they get ranked differently now? Will we see a regular season schedule changed? Possibly even a severe paring back of non-conference games. Pac-12 and to a lesser degree the Big 12 and the ACC, should it help them? What about Notre Dame and other independents? Will conference championships games go by the wayside in order to protect some teams? I mean, why risk putting your team in the conference championship? You know, why put an undefeated Iowa in the conference championship against undefeated Ohio State if all it means is that Iowa gets knocked out of a college football playoff berth? Clemson co-champions, they're probably both in the top 12. Both of them get in. Another one, because it would be teams 5 through 12 would be playing pre-round games. So will Southern teams have to go to Northern stadiums? See where that's going? Would a second in the SEC, Florida or Georgia or whoever, they have to go play it? You know, would number 12, Coastal Carolina even, have to go play at number 5, Wisconsin? Because that's the way they're talking about it, is 5 through 12 on-campus games. Better seed gets the home game. Could that happen? Comes to the bowl system. Is it incorporated even more? Are the lesser bowls still in play? Finally, on that note, I'm asking, can we finally get those lesser bowls to play before December 28th or so? You know, it gets kind of ridiculous when you have your New Year's 6 bowls, and then 4 days later, you have some ignorant bowl featuring 2 teams from nowhere, a Sun Belt team and a whatever team, a Mountain West team. I'm not knocking those conferences, people. What I'm saying is they should not be playing after New Year's 6 bowls. Payouts are nowhere close to those other bowls. Prestige, viewership, attendance. Just get rid of those things as far as being after late December. Just stop it. It seems like more and more Michigan alums are saying that former and now deceased Wolverine head football coach and athletic director Bo Schembechler knew what was going on with one of the doctors in the athletic department, getting a little too hands-on with athletes, both male and female. One accusation even came from Bo's adopted son, as well as 2 other players who say Dr. Robert Anderson committed sexual assault over the years that he was part of the UM system from 1966 to 2003. Yeah, the complaints began 3 years ago in a letter from former wrestler Tad DeLuca. He wrote to the university. Since then, over 800 complaints have been filed. Really? Really have mixed feelings on this. Now, it's one thing to say it happened, but at this point, we're talking about 2 people, not one, but 2 people, the accused doctor and the either unaware or complicit Bo Schembechler, who are both no longer living. And look, while some want to compare it to Penn State, it's really more comparable to Michigan State. Penn State was a person who was no longer, I mean, some of it may have occurred while he was coach, but most of it what was testified to was while Jerry Sandusky was no longer a coach at Penn State, but was had use of their facilities. This is more like Michigan State with Larry Nassar, where he was basically assaulting female athletes. In this case, it appears to be both male and female. But again, it's also a situation where neither of the accused is around to defend or comment on their own behalf. That's my problem. Now, look, several Michigan alums are calling on the Michigan Attorney General to investigate, so we'll see how it goes. Purdue head coach Jeff Brohm, he's named three of his new hires, three, as defensive coordinator. Now, look, back in December, he fired Bobby Diaco as defensive coordinator after just one season, which, by the way, I think was kind of crazy, given the craziness of the season to begin with, what with COVID and all, plus the Big Ten dropping their ball. I mean, they were so inept there. So he got rid of Bobby Diaco. He hired three different coaches for different positions, but three of them are being named as defensive coordinator. Yeah, I can't think that's going to go well. I really can't. I don't get that. I mean, why? Back to the College Football Playoff Committee. It appears that one member of the CFP committee, retired Army General Ray Odierno, is stepping away for health reasons. Pretty convenient, because now former Notre Dame linebacker Rod West will be joining the committee. Am I the only person who sees that for what it is? God, I hope not. I really hope not. But really, we're getting a Notre Dame guy on the committee all of a sudden. I mean, when does it end? You know, I talked about before, when are we going to call it out when the Clinton-Arkansas happen? Well, in this case, you know, Notre Dame suddenly getting a seat at the table like that, they're not in a conference. They were in one last year for convenience sake. And frankly, ACC, shame on you for letting them lead you around by the nose. Be that as it may, this is kind of fishy that someone is suddenly sick and they're being replaced with a Notre Dame former player. Gee, nothing going on there. And finally to golf. The U.S. Open starts tomorrow. PGA champ Phil Mickelson, now 51 years of age, goes off at 50-1 odds in Vegas and other sports books. 50-1. Can Phil do it? Obviously, having just won the PGA, sure, he's capable of doing it. Torrey Pines is also, of course, he grew up playing a lot. What about John Rahm? Rahm held a 6-stroke lead after two rounds at the Memorial before a positive COVID test took him out. I mean, will he have any effects, even though he was ostensibly asymptomatic? You know, who knows? What about Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, especially if they play together Saturday or Sunday? Are those guys going to come to blows? Doesn't history tell us anyway that aside from years where there is a dominant guy like Tiger or Jack, there really is no hot hand when it comes to the majors? Really? You know, I mean, anyway, play gets underway tomorrow. It should be a good tournament to watch. Don't expect low scores. One thing the USGA doesn't care about is good scores. In fact, many say the USGA is just the opposite, that they pull out all the stops to try and humble the field. I remember Vito and I talking about it one time. He said the USGA absolutely has ruined the Open with some of the stuff they've done to their courses. By Sunday evening, we should pretty much know. By the way, Bryson DeChambeau is the defending champ, but he's not been playing well this year. But then again, as I said, that doesn't count for much at the U.S. Open historically. I well remember Jack Nicklaus back in 1983 at Oakmont finishing a round, walking off the 18th, looking worse for the wear, man. I remember thinking at the time, oh, my God, Jack, what's happened to you? Give it up. I never would have guessed at that time that 3 years later he'd win the Masters at age of 46. So, in other words, anything, I mean anything can happen in the U.S. Open. So, pretty much covered politics and sports. I'm going to come back with some poly sports stuff after a break here. So have a fun break. Come back if you got questions. 319-527-6706. If you want to talk about any of the stuff I talked about earlier, or if you got other stuff you want to talk about. I think you're going to dig on these couple of polysports stories that I've got. I certainly think they're kind of cool, kind of weird, kind of crazy. One of them you might not say is really polysports. But anyway, be back in a couple. So, hey, go fill up. Are back after a nice 2+ minute interlude with the NWO theme from the old World Championship Wrestling. That's a bunch of Hendrix riffs tied together, basically, is what that is. So if you got anything to call in about, don't forget, hit 1 if you're on there and wanting to talk. Otherwise, hey, just listen along. So here's a weird one, and it definitely falls under poly sports. The American record holder in the women's 1,500 meters and women's 5,000 meters is a woman named Shelby Houlihan. And she has received a 4-year ban from competition. It was confirmed last week by the Court of Arbitration for Sport. She tested positive for nandrolone, which is a banned substance. Now, she received an email back in January from the Athletics Integrity Unit regarding the positive test. Now, she apparently, along with her management, were unable to convince Athletics Integrity Unit or World Anti-Doping Association or the Court of Arbitration for Sport of the reason for her positive test. That reason? Well, she says a pork burrito that she bought and ate at a Mexican street food truck in December is the culprit. Houlihan noted on her Instagram announcement of the suspension that the World Anti-Doping Association has understood for a long time that eating pork can lead to false positives for nandrolone, as certain pigs naturally produce it in high amounts. Organ meat from pigs, in particular, contain the highest levels. Now, the reason I say that, you know, pork bellies are a real positive trend, a real I don't want to say delicacy, but pork belly tacos. It's a big thing now. Not for me, it's not, but pork bellies. Remember in Trading Places, pork bellies. Something very interesting is going to happen in pork bellies. Well, evidently it did. The organ meat from pigs is high in levels of nandrolone. Now, she claims that the WADA lab in the Court of Arbitration for Sport never accounted for this. She says that she passed a polygraph test as well as a hair sample, which would show prolonged nandrolone use versus the type of result she received. She says that the World Anti-Doping Association simply determined that she cheated as a casual or one-time cheater, not ongoing use. She says they didn't listen to her and take into account that it could be what she ate. She concluded her post by saying she wants to be clear. She does not cheat. She's not interested in cheating. She doesn't run for the accolades or the money or the name recognition, but that she does it for the love of running. So evidently, we don't know really what else went on. Doesn't say whether she got to testify before the Court of Arbitration for Sport or whether she got to have a sit-down with the World Anti-Doping Association, or a virtual meeting, I guess. Just that she's tested for positive for nandrolone and that she's out. Now, it would mean both this Olympics and the Olympics in 2024 in, I believe, Paris? Or, I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, Shelby Houlihan, American record holder in the 1500 and the 5000, out of the Olympics at this point. I did not see whether she's going to be allowed to provisionally run in the trials, but if the Court of Arbitration for Sport has ruled, it sounds to me like that's the end run or the end result. There's no going further than that. Like I said before, you can come in and chat. Welcome Vito and Flycatch to the chat room. Good stuff in there when Vito's gets going, I'll tell you that for right now, right off the bat. Okay, this next story, I guess you can call this polysports. Sort of. Okay, NBC Universal Television recently halted production on a series set to be aired after the Summer Olympics. The program is called Ultimate Slip and Slide, and it features contests between teams at a water park with such games as Human Pong, body bowling, cornhole. I don't know how they get that in a water slide with humans. And bocce fall. So the problem, apparently there was an onset outbreak of Giardia, and it affected upwards of 40 people. That sounds kind of benign, right? Well, folks, benign is just about the last thing you get with an outbreak of Giardia. First, it's primarily a waterborne bacteria, which is not good in a water park. Now, it often afflicts hikers and mountaineers and campers and other people who travel around backcountry waters, glaciers, etc. It can last for up to 2 weeks or longer if untreated, and it can be quite debilitating. Symptoms can include loss of appetite, extreme stomach discomfort, and foul-smelling gas. Yeah, I said that, foul-smelling gas. But there's another symptom, or should I say a manifestation? Yeah, I guess in this case, manifestation sounds better. The manifestation, let's just say that in a water park, in a competition with 40 people, it's the one manifestation that would pretty much halt a water park production. Actually, pretty much halt any production. That manifestation comes in just two words, but they are two words that are about the worst two-word combination you could have. Those two words, explosive diarrhea. Yeah, if anything could shut down a TV production, I'd guess 40 people with explosive diarrhea could do it. Now, remember, this is a water park with some kind of sports going on, and then the politics of it, you know. Anyway, the production originally paused June 2nd. The studio was made aware a crew member had tested positive for Giardia. Initial tests showed no presence of Giardia in the water. But evidently, more testing on June 10th resulted in a positive test. This came after 40 folks suffered the explosion, and production was shut down. Vito in the chat room just said, holy crap. Yeah. Okay, pretty grim. Not really funny. But somehow, entertainment being what it is, the show's hosts and others turned Twitter into a laugh riot over the event. Not sure why exactly. As I said earlier, when the two exact words you never want mentioned together, those being explosive diarrhea, when that afflicts 40 people on a television production, I think somebody could maintain a modicum of seriousness. So I will, for the sake of this. Just remember, don't drink from just any lake or river or glacier or other body of water. The results, as I said, could be the two worst words you could ever experience at the same time. We'll close out Polysports with this from Red China. A Chinese official that was involved in that May 22nd ultramarathon event resulted in the deaths of 21 runners. He's taken his own life. Jingtai Communist Party Secretary Li Zhuobi jumped from his apartment and died last week. Vito now says it's a running joke. Oh, my God. Anyway, an investigation by Red China officials resulted in the firings of 27 race officials, although Li Zhuobi was posthumously exempted. His deputy, Zhang Wenling, was fired. Now, here's the thing. Runners were running approximately 100 kilometers. That's 62 miles. At altitudes up to 9,800 feet. Red China says race officials didn't properly plan for weather events and has allegedly offered up to $150,000 to each of the families of each victim. But some have apparently said that's not enough, claiming that they were the sole family breadwinners and were at the top of their sport. About 50 of the 170 runners took shelter in caves managed by local shepherds. One of those who perished was a somewhat well-known competitor, Liang Jing, who previously won a 100-kilometer race in the Gobi Desert. Wow. So, yeah. The guy jumped to his death. I mean, I have a feeling he was probably heading for not a good thing, but jumping to your death over it, that's kind of crazy. Hey, we got a caller on the line. Let's just introduce him properly, the way he should be introduced, the way he's supposed to be introduced.
It's not unusual to see me cry. I wanna die.
Brother Tommy, what's up?
Hey, correction number one. And who do I have to bribe to get Black Betty for my introduction song?
Well,
I thought we went
Vito
over
just,
that.
Vito just put in the chat room, Black Betty will be uploaded tonight, Hank. I know how to upload it.
Oh, awesome. Thank Vito. Someone around here can get something done. Two things. I wasn't even going to call in.
Let me explain something, though. Most people don't associate, even though it might be the Tom Jones version, most people don't associate that song with Tom Jones. The song we just played,
He did a rendition of it, but I think it makes me a lot cooler. Incidentally, when I go on stage, girls throw panties at me, too. So it's just, to me, it's just a better song. How about that? I'll get to my point in a minute. How about having a sit down with the 18-year-old daughter? Hey, honey, how was the Tom Jones concert? Oh, it was awesome, Daddy. I threw my panties on the stage. No, honey, I said, how was the concert? I threw my panties on. Oh, shit, that's what I thought she said. Son of a bitch. You imagine having to sit down with your daughter? And then they found out that it was the Stooges that did it, you know, the his entourage, to make it look like other people were doing it. Who came up with that brainchild? I know. Let's throw panties on the stage. Anyways, all right, that's not my point. First off, Del Mar is in San Diego, California. It's not in Maryland.
Well,
like
the one I looked up says it's in Maryland, as in Delaware, Maryland.
Del Mar is in San Diego, California. That I can assure you. Lost plenty of dollars there. I can attest to that.
Okay, well, let me just look this up on Google while we're talking. Keep going. Hello?
Look it up. Well, I wasn't even going to call in, but you talked about it. What's that?
2021 Breeders' Cup, Del Mar Racetrack, Del Mar Thoroughbred Club.
Del Mar's in California. It's in San Diego, outskirts of San Diego. That's not even up for debate.
Okay, that's cool.
But anyways, I wasn't even going to call in, but you said explosive diarrhea. I got to let the little hangsters know about Brother Tommy having some explosive diarrhea. I think I told you about the time I literally got to my front door. Little hangsters, it's not 25 feet away from the bathroom. But speaking of explosive diarrhea, I could not wait. Bing, bang, boom, out the chute. And I had one other one coming back from the 7-Eleven, going to buy my beer, innocently enough. I come back, I get about 200 yards away, and I've got that disease, whatever it's called, dicocardia or whatever the fuck you called it. I got to have it. When I think about my trials and tribulations, the first thing that comes up isn't death, it isn't Holocaust, it's explosive diarrhea. And I just wanted the little hangsters to know if they've got it, they're not alone. Ooh,
well,
when I heard you bring up explosive diarrhea, I had to chime in.
Giardia, it's called Giardia lamblia, and it's common on expeditions, you know, because they get water and they use their filters, but they don't always get everything, and they don't boil stuff at, you know, 10,000 feet or 20,000 feet above sea level. They just don't. So they drink, but they have to keep hydrated, and so sometimes that happens. They get Giardia lamblia, and...
Well,
you know,
symptomatic, I'm not. It says something about not losing appetite. God knows I haven't lost my appetite, so that part's cool. But it's no joke. It's no joke. I mean, I'm so sensitive to diarrhea, it's ridiculous. I literally walk around my apartment complex now for the most part, unless I, you know, have a real nice grumpy at like 8 in the morning. Then I walk outside of the gates. Short of that, though, man, I just walk within 100 yards. I just go in circles. These people got to think I'm a fucking lunatic. They just keep me seeing me walk back and forth, like 100 yards north, 100 yards south. Because the minute I start feeling it, brother, I won't even go up to Gainesville to drive to Gainesville with my wife to get my kids and whatnot, because I'm like, you're in a traffic jam. There's no going back when you got Giardia or whatever the fuck you call it. But I just had to chime in on this.
It's a parasite. It's not, I mean, it's not, it doesn't stay with you forever. I mean, theoretically, you know, take antibiotics or whatever, and maybe you need. Maybe
well,
you need
I come out of a
and...
restaurant bathroom. I come out of a restaurant bathroom, and the manager ain't screaming parasite. He's saying, I don't know what the fuck crawled up your ass and died, but take it, get yourself, and get your friends the fuck out of here. I mean, that's how bad it is. It's literally, I can't go sometimes 30, 40 feet, but I don't want to hold it up. I just wanted to correct you on the one and tell the others, the caller ins, the ones making jokes about explosive diarrhea. It's no joke, fellas. Believe me, you have it. You'll retract all of those jokes. Incidentally, Vito, not the most creative jokes in the world, but I take my hat off to you. But I felt triggered, and I wanted to call in. I don't like people talking about diarrhea. It hurts. I would rather you guys talk about the race, critical race theory. That doesn't trigger me. Explosive diarrhea stories, though, they trigger me. So I just had to let that out. Just kidding, Beetle. Good joke.
I'm looking, though. I don't get it. Why did I see that it was in Maryland?
Google Del Mar
Racetrack.
It's going to say San Diego.
Yeah, you're right. That's what I'm getting. It's saying San Diego.
You ever seen the movie Grifters with John Cusack?
No.
All right. Well, anyways, it's a good movie, actually, although John Cusack is an asshole, as we all know. But it's a good movie, and that's when you see her, the guy that used to be married to or was dating Nicholson, the ugly one, Jack Nicholson.
She
was in Princess Honor.
Yeah, Angelica Houston.
Huh?
Angelica
Houston. Yes, yeah. She was in that, too. When she goes to the track, she's hooked up with the mob and whatnot. That track that you see her go through is Del Mar. It's in the outskirts of San Diego. All you got in Maryland is Pimlico and Laurel. Those are the only, I mean, of the real tracks. You might have some quarter tracks and stuff like that.
Time to go, it's time to go see the fella on Pimlico Road.
Well, what's that?
Tin Men.
Tin Men?
Yeah, Tin Men, right? Time to go see that fella on Pimlico Road. Can't run this government without his $4,000. So, anyway. What's your thought on the 12-team playoff?
I'm actually for it. I think that's about the right number. Personally, I mean, I don't like the extra two games for some teams, but like you said, just forego the championship game, so it's only an extra game because four are going to get a bye. I like it. I don't think eight's enough. I think 16's too many. I think 12's just about right. Then again, I'm a purist. I think you said it once. I kind of prefer the 70s where bowl games meant something, and that was enough for me. But but if they're going to do it, I think 12's better than 8, personally. So, you know, mixed feelings. I haven't really looked into it or delved into it with much thought as to how, you know, what the ramifications could be with injuries and stuff like that. But when I heard it at first glance, it looks to me to be okay. I mean, I like the, somewhat ambivalent, you know. I mean, it's not going to make or break my day, that's for sure. But
yeah,
I think
right.
The fifth team can get hosed. I think the sixth, meaning ranking, can get hosed. 8 might be enough, but I like 12 with 4 getting a bye better than 8, to be honest with you. Any team ranked 13 that doesn't get in, they don't have a legitimate gripe. You know?
Right. No doubt.
The 15 does. LSU's got one loss. Ohio State's got one loss. You know, and they're 5. I think they can make a legitimate gripe that they deserve to be in there. But the 13th ranked team is going to have at least 2 losses. Sorry, you got no legitimate gripe. So, I don't know. It sounds equitable to me. I didn't hear what you said on it. What's your feeling on it?
Well, I mean,
I heard you talking about it. I didn't hear you giving a viewpoint one way or the other.
Well, here's the problems I see. When I say problems, I don't really see. I think anything that where you can expand it a little bit is legitimate. To expand it beyond 12, like to expand it to 16, you're pretty much at that point knocking the bowl picture out in, as we know it. The bowls as we know them, you know, they're done. But at least as far as the New Year's bowls and stuff like that. I mean, they could incorporate it, but who knows? I mean, you know, players are in finals often during that time, you know, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So there's that aspect of it. You know, there's that. But I think the other thing of it is, you know, Notre Dame is not going to be a top four team. They initially said that the four would be conference champions. Now they're not saying that, you know. So, you know, I don't like the idea of a team that, you know, I also don't like the idea, frankly, of an undefeated UCF or an undefeated Coastal Carolina or Liberty not being not having more in the game, not having a shot.
12 gets them there. 12 gets them there.
Yeah,
I don't care who you
them.
Are. You're undefeated. You're D1. You're going to get there.
Yeah, if you're undefeated in.
I mean, when was the last time we had an undefeated team? Did Bama go undefeated last year? They lost one, didn't they?
No, they went undefeated last year. Remember,
okay.
It was a shorter season.
It's pretty rare.
It's been rare.
Yeah,
I mean,
good.
I think you know. Clemson and Bama have both done it recently, but not that many times. I mean, it's you know, so that to me, I just like the idea that it would, you know, that the second place team in the Big Ten, so to speak, still has a shot. Because let's face it, the second SEC team is always in consideration. A second team from any other conference rarely is. Now, here's one the other thing I think, though. I think you might see where teams, you know, I don't know, it might change divisions. It also might, you know, think about a team or a conference like the Big 12, because I think you'll see conferences getting rid of non-conference games. You know, kind of hard for me to justify any team that gets in when they've played, you know, Charleston Southern or Northern Iowa for that matter. You know, but I mean, but I think expanding it brings more to the table. You will see your Boise States, your UCFs, you know, that have had multiple years. You know, Coastal Carolina and Liberty, they were 1 year last year. but you know, multiple years for UCF, multiple years for Boise State, you'll see them get more than just a New Year's Bowl. Now they're getting a shot at going. The other thing I like, though, let's say that you got a fifth seed, you know, second place Big Ten or Big Ten team. Let's say that, you know, let's say that Ohio State beats Iowa or Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship, and the loser of that game is a one-loss team. Well, you know, it's not hard to figure that a Wisconsin or Iowa might still end up being ranked fifth, and it would be nice for the fifth-ranked team to be able to host a team. So then they're not all be playing in the backyard of the SEC or the Pac-12 or whatever.
Right.
So that to me is
the only advantage to what you had just said. The only advantage to playing a Northern Iowa, which Iowa does now and then, actually kind of frequently, is their programs need money. And they play us. We give them, what, $500,000, $750,000.
Yeah.
It makes it so other guys can play. It's at a lesser level. So I kind of actually like that. I agree with you. It's somewhat the integrity of the rankings and stuff are somewhat skewed. But beyond that, I think it's big brother helping out little brother, you know, from a monetary standpoint. That's how they get a lot of these guys get their money and stuff.
Yeah,
so that's
absolutely
the only reason I like the Kent States of the world and the Iowa, Northern Iowa's. You know, so
yeah.
I know mixed feelings on that too. I would accept either argument. Hey, it really doesn't say anything about the teams, but it redistributes money. So
yeah, it does.
Rich
but
up
I mean,
the
but
floor.
I think I,
Robin Hood
I just I think the real positive is you mentioned a MAC team. You know, the MAC is going to possibly get a seat at the table now. You know, the
right.
Big 12 might get two teams in. You know, or the Pac 12 has been shut out for a
while. Not going to get two teams in. The Big 12, besides Oklahoma, who is there? Kansas State stopped off the cliff. Who is there in the Big 12 anymore besides Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
I'd be willing to send Nebraska back there. That's fine by me, although it's
yeah.
an easy win for Iowa nowadays. So I mean, kind of want them to stay in the Big 10.
I just think that's what it does, though. So anyway, hey, let me let you run. I want to acknowledge a couple people in the chat room, and so I'll cut you off.
You got
and,
it. Good
we'll
talking
talk to you.
And lay off the people that have explosive diarrhea in the future.
Will do.
And get that
will
damn
do.
Black Betty rolling.
Okay, will do. Talk to you later.
All right, talk to you in a bit.
I wanted to acknowledge a couple people in the chat room. Flycatch was here earlier. Southern Sense, Annie is in. Annie has a show on Fridays. It is on Blog Talk Radio. It is also simulcast on various stations. But she just said she's getting off at pretty soon. She said that her last show didn't record for them. That's kind of sad. We'll miss her. But anyway, you can listen to Annie, at least for now, on Fridays on Blog Talk Radio. Brother Warren was in here earlier. He goes by the name New Orleans Wake Up. He didn't want to stay. Evidently, I was boring him. But I talked about last week. Brother Warren had an awesome show, and I listened to it again the other night. I don't know if it was it was live because I was able to see the chat. But I don't know if it was an encore or what. He had a guy on who wrote a book about John Coltrane, legendary jazz saxophonist. The author was also a medical doctor, but wrote this book. And just a fascinating show, talking about what Coltrane went through. It wasn't all, you know, those of you that know Brother Warren, he tends to talk about Black America issues, which is fine, but doesn't interest everyone. But this was, you know, this was highly interesting. And if you haven't heard some of the history of John Coltrane had actually developed a heroin addiction, but had an epiphany, basically says he heard God, saw God, talked to God in 1957 and just cold quit doing drugs. Now he ended up dying, I don't know, a few years later of liver cancer. And his mother thought that was, you know, she said that he had said he saw God, and his mother was worried that the fact that people who see God usually don't live much longer. But anyway, it was a great show. Go to it, look up New Orleans Wake Up on Blog Talk Radio, and you should be able to find the show. It's about, like I said, about John Coltrane. I'm fascinated because one of my favorite guitarists is a guy named John McLaughlin, who was very heavily influenced by Coltrane's music. So look it up. Go to New Orleans Wake Up on the Blog Talk Radio and look for the show. It was last Sunday, I believe. and I don't remember the title of the show, but it was last Sunday, and you'll know it. You can look at any show on Blog Talk Radio. You can do that and look and see what the show is about. And that's what it was about, was about John Coltrane. Now, being in New Orleans, obviously that's a hot spot for jazz and even blues. Maybe not always, like, you know, some of them have branched out, but it's still a hot spot for musical stuff in this country. And so give it a listen, go listen to it. And frankly, hopefully if it gets you to listen to John Coltrane's music, because John Coltrane did a few other things. He started out playing mainly tenor sax, but then he had played soprano sax on a couple recordings and utilized it a lot more. Some people thought he was nuts for doing it. Miles Davis, believe it or not, did not think it was a smart move. But be that as it may, John Coltrane, one of the most impressive and amazing improvisational jazz players in the history of jazz, basically. Hey, folks, I am pretty much at the end of anything important and interesting to talk about. I want to thank Brother Warren for popping in quickly, though he did. Vito for being here, as always, adding, and Annie from Southern Sense. She says she's going to go to southernsense.com, southern-sense, S-E-N-S-E, and you'll be able to find out how you can listen to Annie. And again, you can always listen to Vito and Al on Monday night, 6 o'clock Eastern. Eric from Kafiristan with Radio Free Kafiristan, Tuesday nights at 6. Thursday nights, Paul, the deplorable Paul Sutliff, is in with the Sutliffian Report, also at 6. And then Fridays at 11 or 12 Eastern time, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday, also known as Islam in Focus. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy with Revealing the Truth About Islam. And then Sundays, Eric's back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Again, to interact with the show, you can interact with me on Facebook. Just look at Hank Jones Polysports or email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I am also on Twitter. I'm interacting more with people there, including Sue, who is in our phone room tonight. Sue listening in, from Sue from New Mexico. Thank you, Sue, and thanks for all the mentions and basically keeping the flow of information going amongst all of us. She's finding some of these great stories and passing them along. Some of them aren't, I mean, when I say great information, some of them aren't great stories. Some of them are really pathetic with stuff that's going on in our country right now. But that's just, you know, that we are the ones that are going to have to do something about that. So thanks to the others. Thanks for Brother Tommy's call in. Other listeners, I see some numbers out there. One of them, I think my big sister, a friend of mine, another friend of mine, T. Bodie's number, I see him. I see another number I don't recognize, but anyway, thank you all for listening in. I will be back next week at the same time, 5:30. Hopefully it'll be all good stuff. Hopefully I won't be talking about our bumbling, stumbling, mumbling president and his being protected by the media. Hopefully I won't have to report on more suicides, quote, suicides from victims of the Clinton crime family. But be that as it may, folks, y'all have a good week. Have a safe weekend. Remember, hurricane season is here, so if you're in a coastal area, always be prepared. You shouldn't be out buying supplies the day before or the week before. You should have your supplies all the time. It's a good time to get out and just be alive. Go paddleboarding with folks. Get out and build. Work on your projects. Do whatever, but do something. Have a great week. Good night, folks. And maybe I'll send you off with a little... Well, 10 seconds left. Nothing there. Nothing there. Folks, y'all have a good one. Good night.